Good afternoon, and welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection on KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. There's much to debate about the changing tide of the marijuana issue in our community and country. Today's show, however, has nothing to do with the legalization or public sale of marijuana, or whether marijuana is safe for adult recreational use. Our focus today is on the epidemic of adolescent marijuana abuse and the unquestionable impact it's having on young people and families in our community. We'll also spend some time discussing how parents should respond to their kids' experimentation with marijuana and answer the question, when should parents get really concerned about their teens' marijuana use and what can they do about it? Joining me to discuss teen marijuana abuse is Anchorage therapist Tad Sumner from Psychology Resources. Prior to joining Psychology Resources, Tad was the clinical director of the Volunteers of America ARCH residential program for teenagers with substance addictions. Tad has over 14 years of experience working with both adults and adolescents with a wide range of issues, including depression, anxiety, ADHD, trauma, stress, behavioral problem, anger management, and substance abuse. Welcome to the show, Tad. Thanks for taking the time to join me today.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get started, I want to let people know how we can be reached. You can call us locally at 550-8433. Or toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And you can email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. If you're just a new listener, then line one, you got to spell that out, line1@alaskapublic.org. All right. I guess before we get going on adolescent substance abuse, I want to, well, I guess we're not doing substance abuse, we're doing marijuana abuse. And I've kind of left out the other substances. Maybe you can come back and do something else on that. There's a lot of different angles we can tackle this thing, but marijuana abuse is something that crops up over and over again in my practice, and I know in yours. And but give us a little bit of your background in adolescent substance abuse, what you did at ARCH, what that was about.
Well, actually, I'll say before that, I worked in retail. So I worked in retail for a long time and worked in snowboard and skateboard shops and stuff. And so I loved working with teenagers. I always have. And then I decided I didn't want to sell them stuff anymore. I just wanted to kind of help them out. So I started working as a floor staff at the treatment center at ARCH. And then eventually just worked there longer and longer and became a counselor. And then eventually became the director of ARCH. And I think I've worked with about 800 kids with substance abuse problems over the years.
Okay.
And well over 1,000 at this point. So I just loved working with the kids, and it was really, really cool to see them get better. You know, most kids came in there and said, most kids aren't like, hey, take me away from my family for 6 to 8 months, you know? And most of them didn't think they had a problem, but it was super cool to see them get better.
Yeah, ARCH is long-term. It's part of the Volunteers of America program, correct? And
right.
VOA does what? They encompass they have a wide range of services.
They're a national, you know, nonprofit. So
okay.
They're known actually for housing in most of the country, but in Alaska, they've been known for substance abuse for the last 30 years. So they have the whole continuum of care. So one of them's Prime for Life. So a kid gets busted at school for pretty much anything with substance abuse, and the school says, you have to go for Prime for Life, which is 4 to 5 days about don't do drugs, listen to your parents, stay in school. I mean, there's, of course, some more education, and I think
right.
They try to do a decent job with the type of kids they have, but then they have outpatient, intensive outpatient, all the way up to residential.
And the residential program at ARCH, like I said, is about a year, or
it's
9 to...
It's about, actually, the average... Now, I left 5 years ago. It's been a while, but
okay.
The average, I think, was like 5 months and 12 days. But it would, you know, really range from 4.5 months all the way up to 8 months, depending on the kid. So
right.
No, not usually. It's not as long as some of the other programs, but 6 months is a chunk of time.
That is a chunk of time. We're going to get into treatment later because I got a lot of questions about treatment for substance abuse with adolescents because it's a tough sell.
Yeah.
Got a lot of resistance. Not a lot of kids are at the point where they've hit bottom, and frankly, they don't really see a problem with it. But
right.
So there's huge range of use patterns in people. Today, we're specifically targeting adolescent marijuana abuse. So if we're talking about marijuana abuse, that's different than use. Is there recreational use in teenagers? What makes something abuse versus experimentation for, let's say, a 15, 16-year-old?
I think actually that's a great question. If we look at the DSM-5 criteria, right, which is the Diagnostical Statistical Manual of Mental Health Disorders, well, actually, if we look at legality, right, well, it's not legal for 21, so any person that's using under the age is, quote-unquote, you know, abusing it.
Right.
But both Prentice, you and I know about motivational interviewing with kids, which is not like, oh, don't do drugs because it's illegal.
Just say no.
Yeah, all right. Okay, I'll come back next week, right?
Sorry, Mr. Sumner.
Right. Right. Now listen to your parents. Get back at school, right? Unfortunately, that doesn't work. So, yeah, it the bottom line comes back to, does it cause the person problems or not? And the question is, well, if I lived in Hawaii and I surfed all day and I worked at a taco stand and I smoked weed all day, well, is it going to cause me problems? No, probably not. But if I'm trying to go to school, get decent grades, get along with my parents, just navigate how hard teenage life is at all, well, then is it a problem, right? The other argument is, well, if my parents have a problem with it, but I don't, well, then, quote unquote, is it a problem?
Right, because most of the kids I work with are not at the point where they're saying, yeah, I really like to shift this thing back. You know, I'm really worried about my marijuana abuse.
Right.
It's parents' problem. They don't have any problem with it. Yep. Everybody just get off their back.
Right.
So what you're saying is that I always define abuse as if you do something over and over again despite negative consequences, there seems to be a problem.
Right. And I mean, if we look at that, like the simple criteria between experimentation, use, abuse, and then now a whole different realm, addiction, is experimentation is there's no pattern to your use, right? I use here and there totally randomly, right? And
opportunity kind of.
Yeah. And it's really just there's no pattern. Use is now there's any kind of pattern. Is that once a week? Is that once a month? But I do it kind of ritualistic at this point. Then abuse is, okay, does it cause any problems in my life at all? Any, right? Then you talk about abuse.
And then addiction is?
Continued use over and over and over, and the person keeps using. Continued use with problems, right? And then they keep using, keep using despite getting into trouble.
So a parent with a kid who's experimenting or an infrequent user of marijuana really may not even have an idea that their kid is using.
Absolutely not. Run into all the time. And,
right.
And all these great parents, right? They beat themselves up like, oh, I should have known, you know? And they don't, because the great thing about it is they trust their kids, right?
Yeah.
The unfortunate thing is kids are curious.
Yeah, and they test limits, and they want to try new things, and they aren't always. I tell parents a lot of times, you know, you only know really about 10% of the information.
Right.
And so if you're catching it once here and there, it may be something that's a little bit more significant. All right, so we got teenagers today. Like, I get them in my office all the time, and they don't really seem to hold, many of them don't seem to hold the belief that marijuana, say, 2-3 times a week after school, hanging out with their buds, they just don't think it's a problem.
Yeah.
And they kind of, they don't think it's addictive.
Yeah.
So I'd like to, I mean, that's been the raging debate since I was in high school. I mean, it's not addictive, it's super safe. Like, is marijuana an addictive thing? I've done a bunch of research on it. I know you have. From a scientific standpoint, what do you know about the addictive properties of marijuana?
We only have 50 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Actually, one thing I want to say that just to contradict what I just said is I said the problem is kids are curious. I think it's rad that they're curious. So, by the way, right? So
yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
It's what the adolescent brain is wired to
totally
take risks and explore and new environments. It's super adaptive.
Right. And that's the number one reason why I see the kids use. You know, people always are talking about, well, it's peer pressure. Yeah. I mean, I think that's absolutely a reality, but also kids are curious, right? But coming back to addiction is I'm super, super passionate about this issue. And frankly, I grew up in Girdwood. So for me, when the first time I heard that marijuana was addicting, I was like, no, yeah, whatever, right?
The whole community is addicted to
marijuana.
Right,
exactly. So
I'll probably get in trouble for painting everybody in Girdwood as a marijuana smoker.
Love Girdwood. Huge fan of Girdwood. Everyone there does not use.
Nope.
But there was more there probably than other parts of Alaska.
Right.
So back to the point that you're asking about addiction with marijuana is, I mean, the way I frame it up is just purely due to synapses. Okay. So what we know is at this point we have roughly a trillion synapses in our brain. And the synapse is what connects one thought with another thought, right? And that's unconscious, that's conscious, that's behavior, that's thought, right? So if I say cow, you think?
Cow.
Hey, you're not supposed to say that, but might make milk, black and white, things like that. Okay. So the
but
brain,
I got a picture
right,
of a cow.
Okay, yeah. Right. And so when people start doing anything that brings them pleasure, anything, the brain then just starts making a connection. I mean, a literal physiological, well, neurological connection, right? Between this thing
and pleasure.
Pleasure. And what we know now is in the DSM-5, the Diagnostical Statistical Manual for Mental Health Disorders, those of you guys that don't know, gambling addiction is, for the first time ever, was accepted in the DSM-5 as an actual biological addiction. So meaning that we're seeing that the different, like in the nucleus accumbens, the pleasure center of the brain, it is literally getting rewired, and they're seeing it fire up, right, or light up like people with other drug addictions, heroin, meth, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess the debate about, like, is marijuana biologically addicting, the research, frankly, is 50-50 that I've seen. And I don't have time to look at all the research, but I try to stay on top of it. So I'm trying to get to the point. Sorry. So if I do something over and over, drink coffee, Red Bull, ride my bike, blah, blah, blah. Now I'm not going to get into, did Tad Sumner say biking is addiction?
Exercise is addictive. Right. Yeah.
But is that if my brain associates that with dopamine, right, it will associate, oh, well, I'm having a hard time. I'm going to smoke. The other part they've seen is the cannabinoid receptors, which now they've proven, you know, are in our brain, they get changed the more somebody uses. And the way that people are responsive to natural dopamine is less intense for regular marijuana users.
So the brain's waiting for the artificial,
right,
external stimuli to give pleasure rather than the internal drive.
Beautifully and simply said.
Okay.
I mean, that's my understanding of it. Yeah. Right. And then also the part we were talking about a little bit before we came on was where people think, oh, well, marijuana is not addicting because unlike any other drug, it has 30 days, right, where you can just naturally detox. So one thing you and I were talking about is the analogy I like to use is Thanksgiving dinner. I don't know about you, but I get down on Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh yeah, it's my favorite holiday ever. I love it.
So I'm a potato fan. So if I get down on Thanksgiving dinner, and a week from now, if I still have half of Thanksgiving dinner in my stomach, well, I'm probably not going to be starving, right? Might be a little hungry. Then a week after, it cuts another half, right? Half life. 25% of Thanksgiving dinner is still in my tummy. I have a 3-year-old, so my tummy. So I'm probably gonna be hungry, but I'm not gonna be starving. And that's what marijuana does, right?
It weans your body naturally. It kind of eases off.
Right, which is wonderful on one hand. On the other hand, then it's saying, well, I'm grumpy and I'm irritable and I can't sleep. 2 weeks later, well, it can't be from weed. I stopped 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Right. So we hear frequently when I was at Arch, at around 3 or 4 weeks, I can't even describe how many times I would hear kids say, the fog's lifted.
Yeah.
Right. Like literally they would use that same similar analogy, you know. So anyway.
They've been looking through a mist at the world and now things are clearing up.
Right.
Sun's out.
Right.
Starting to think.
Right.
Yeah. That's remarkable. So the addictive properties, I mean, we can debate it, and I know you can find research on the internet to support any position, but I don't see much question of, you know, from a behavioral standpoint that the kids that I work with, I mean, every week I have this conversation over and over again with parents in my office and kids, And they say to me all the time, I can quit whenever I want. I just don't want to. Right. I just like it. Right. I'm like, well, that's convenient. Like, it's right. causing you all these problems. You're having school problems, family relationship problems. Everybody's upset. And you would still, you gave up hockey. You no longer, you know, are hanging out with your friends. You got this whole new set of friends that your parents don't know. And everything's changed in the last, let's say, you know, 9 months. And the kids just look at you and they're like, no, I got this. Right. And what we're finding is they don't have it. One of the things that's indicative, I've been in this business long enough now in private practice where I'm starting to get people back in their early 20s yep. that I saw at 13, 14, 15 when they were smoking weed.
Yep.
And they're struggling.
Yep,
a lot
me
of
too.
Them are yep. really struggling with how do I stop? And they're really starting to
understand that.
Yeah, to come on board with like, yeah, that stuff you were, I'm back here because the stuff you were saying happened. And now I want to figure out a different way to do this.
And then you say, you point them and I say, I told you so.
Right? Nobody listens to Prentice. That's what I say.
Actually, can I make one other point really
quick? Prentice doesn't listen to Prentice half the time. But,
can I make one other point really quick? The other thing is that when we talk about what addiction is, it's tolerance, right? And we know now that marijuana is nothing like it was in the 60s. It's nothing like it was even in the 90s. The way that advancements have come in hydroponics, marijuana in the 60s probably had, I don't know, around 10% THC. Now it's around 20%. They're even seeing yields of 30%. But now dabs and wax.
Dabs are up 40, 50, 60%, right?
They're getting, on average, yields from 70 to 90% THC.
Okay.
And so people are now blacking out. Passing out. Now, there is no incident I've ever heard of, this is true, that anyone's actually died for marijuana use, right? That's a big argument.
Right, an overdose kind
right,
of thing, yeah.
Right, but people's tolerance are going through the roof. And the other thing we know about teenagers is because they have such high metabolisms, they also binge drink unlike adults. And so with teenagers, you have this combination where the brain doesn't develop till the age of 24 for males, 23 for females, from what we know. And they're while the brain's developing, they're teaching it, well, this is what I need to cope.
Right.
Right? And it becomes a mechanism, again, affecting the dopamine levels. There's
right.
a science I can drop. That's it.
For those of you who might be tuning in late, my guest today is Anchorage adolescent therapist Tad Sumner. From Psychology Resources, our topic today is adolescent marijuana abuse. You can reach us with your questions or comments at our local phone number, 550-8433. Call us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752 or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. I notice I get a lot of calls in the second half of the show and then right up towards the end. So if you got a question for Tad or myself about marijuana abuse, your own experience with it as a teenager maybe, or your struggles with your kid, give us a call and maybe we can get your question answered on the air. So please feel free. It always makes it a little bit more interesting show when we have some folks call in. So parents come... Kid comes home, he smells weird, smells like cigarettes or weed or something. Parents find out that he's smoking weed. What should parents do first? How should they talk to him? Hopefully they're not waiting until their kid is a teenager to discuss drugs and marijuana. And maybe that's another conversation for a different day.
Well, actually, just quickly, from my understanding, the research is showing teach them younger and younger and younger about drugs. I mean, my three-year-old, I'm probably... not going to be talking about drug abuse, but really even in fourth, fifth grade, kids are learning about it much sooner than people realize. So I'd say that the absolute latest is by the time you get into sixth grade, seventh grade, maybe at the absolute latest, you have to have a real frank conversation with your kid about what your boundaries and your rules are.
Well, we know that human beings learn things really, really well when they're young.
Totally.
And things get ingrained, and most of our habits and our attitudes about life are formed early in life. So you wait until the peers are educating them at 13 about drugs, and you're going to have a very different conversation. I've already had a lot of conversations with my 10-year-old, and starting with my 8-year-old, I think it's about time they start understanding what it is.
Awesome.
All right, we got our first phone call. Let's go to Kimberly. You're on the air with Tad Sumner.
Hi, I was just curious. I'm not sure how to phrase this, about the type of controls you're using to define marijuana habitual use as abusive in teenagers. do you have any controls that show that these kids are not also engaging in other behavior that is contributing to the problems in their lives, like failing in school that's not related to marijuana but some other issues going on in their lives? I mean, are you saying that marijuana causes the problems, or kids that have a lot of other problems may also have marijuana, and then maybe you're saying, aha, you're smoking marijuana, this is the culprit? I could take my answer off here if you understand my question.
Kimberly, thank you. That's a great question. We'll answer it with you off the air because, that's a really good question.
Super good question.
And a valid point. So,
do you want to take it?
Go ahead.
When I was doing assessments at Volunteers of America with kids, this is exactly what we're trying to tease apart, right? Because you don't want somebody that is doing an assessment with a kid saying, oh, I'm just going to look for reasons to justify that they have problems in drugs. You really want to be looking at, like, what else could be going on? Okay, so for example, well, my kid doesn't play hockey anymore, and now they only smoke pot. Well, what we're trying to tease apart is exactly that. Well, are you not playing any hockey anymore for other reasons, or is it because you'd rather smoke pot? Now, we get really into, and this might be another hour show, yeah, about essentially, I lost my train of thought. The hour show that I forgot.
Yeah.
Must not have been that important. I guess essentially, why is somebody using, and my point was, I don't personally like the term self-medicating. Because the term self-medicating implies that you're doing something that is making the problem better. And drugs work. Drugs have been around since the Bible can quote, people getting drunk. So drugs work, but unfortunately, immediately with everyone, they can work really well for anxiety, depression. I mean, they're even doing research now about marijuana use and how it can, and treating marijuana or treating anxiety,
right,
depression. GHB for tremors and et cetera, right? Seizures, I mean. And back to the point, though, Kimberly, so we're always trying to tease apart, what is the reason? Is there an underlying issue due to depression, self-esteem, anxiety, that they're maybe not playing hockey anymore, as an example? Or is it due to marijuana? Or it's and or, sometimes both.
Yeah.
A
lot of the stuff that I've seen is, it's a chicken or the egg thing.
Right.
What came first? And at some point, it doesn't matter.
Right.
If a kid is abusing marijuana, right, on a, let's say, 4 to 5 times a week, or a lot of kids are smoking it, at lunch, and if they're doing all that stuff, then you're not going to address the underlying depression until you get that sort of in check. So I did a show, I guess my last show was with Dr. Mondemore, and we talked about adolescent depression, and one, mm-hmm, of the signs of adolescent depression is substance abuse, mm-hmm, isolation, giving up interest in other activities,
right,
which is all the same things that we're saying marijuana use. Kimberly, we are not saying that it is the cause of all adolescent problems. In fact, it's often, I think, a symptom of a kid who is frustrated in school and gets down and hooks up with sort of maybe a negative peer influence, and then they do something, it feels good. Maybe they have a genetic predisposition to substance disorders, and maybe there's some dysfunction in the family. Mom and dad aren't paying attention. They're getting divorced. It got really ugly. Kid doesn't have a lot of supervision. I mean, we go on and on about all the reasons, and sometimes it's just that a kid gets a hold of it. Parents aren't doing anything wrong. Family's great.
Oh, absolutely.
The environment's good, good structure, and kid just gets exposed to it, starts hanging out with the kids. So, I don't know. It is tough to tease out. All this
totally.
Stuff overlaps, and addressing these things early is super important. So that's a great question, Kimberly. Thank you for the call. I hope we answered it adequately. So is marijuana a gateway drug? I've always heard a lot of people have said cigarettes and alcohol are probably the more frequently first used substances by teens. You can get nicotine and alcohol from your parents' kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really good question and something to talk about. I absolutely think everything can be a gateway drug, right? Sugar, Red Bull, cigarettes, alcohol, and absolutely, I think marijuana absolutely can be. You know, the argument for most teenagers if they're using pot is, well, I'm not doing anything else. I'd again argue research doesn't necessarily support that. Eventually, they get desensitized to, well, marijuana is not really a drug, right? It's a natural herb, et cetera, that argument.
I hear that four times a week.
Oh,
at least.
Is that it?
Yeah, at least.
Right.
That's a slow week.
So then, well, maybe I'll try shrooms because that's something that's natural. And maybe I'll try Molly or Xanax, right? So it just seems like it's usually just a process of desensitization where this is okay now, so I'll try something else.
And they're more inclined when they're abusing, I think, marijuana or alcohol to become depressed and to isolate more from their parents and maybe run with a crowd that has more exposure to other drugs. And so it creates more opportunity. A lot of factors that go into that gateway drug. I wasn't satisfied with the answer we gave about how parents should address their children when they find out that their 15-year-old has started smoking weed. I think we got sidetracked with a call. But how do parents say? I mean, what do they say if they find out little Johnny's smoking weed?
Well, I mean, the first thing I want to emphasize, and I am going to try to answer your question this time, is you've got to have a relationship with the kid. Because otherwise, you just become the permission granter or the, you know, the taker awayer. That's a clinical term.
Yeah.
So if your kid doesn't respect you and value you, then they're just going to get better at going under radar, right? So I guess the big part where I'm trying to emphasize it, and I'm always doing this with parents when I'm first meeting with them, doing the intake, is how often you spend time with your kid. Do you have quality time with your kid outside of just, can I, you know, play Xbox, right?
Right.
So the first thing is to have a conversation with them. And ideally, if you find out in a way that isn't incredibly traumatic, which is probably tough for any parent, like, what, you're smoking weed, right? Is to try to reinforce that they can talk to you about it. And then just start educating them. Really, it's important to talk about what the morals and values are in your family. Because there's a very big difference I see with parents that are saying, you absolutely cannot use this in our house. And the kid might be smart enough or doesn't have a good enough relationship or just likes weed too much that they still try to do it. That's very, very different than, hey, really, you really shouldn't be doing that. Right? Very different boundary there with parents.
Right.
So I have a kid that just came back from college. Don't want to say anything more specific, but they did not know what their parents' values and morals were around drug use because their parents felt like it was never a problem for them in school. So they never had that discussion. So I think it's being very, very clear about what the consequences are, but also what the rewards are. From my understanding, I think people are almost 9 times more likely to change a behavior if they're praised opposed to punished. So the dynamic that we both probably see is parents catch their kids being bad and punish them opposed to praising them. Hey, I'm so proud of you for not going to that party or going to that party and calling me or et cetera, et cetera. So again, not sure if I'm answering your question, but it would be setting boundaries, setting what the consequences are, but also what the reward is. If I can trust you, right, you're going to transition to adulthood and have a lot of freedom.
Right. I know a lot of kids that are smoking a ton of weed and still driving their cars, still have expensive cell phones. Their parents are really upset and angry at them. But there's not a lot of, I mean, the kids seem to be driving the bus. 16 years old, they got everything they need. They're kind of, you know, they get in trouble for a couple of days and then it goes away. But I'm seeing a lot of, I mean, how do parents get that power back? I mean, what's the parental power is a tricky thing once you give it away.
I mean, man, well said. And man, being a parent myself, and again, I only have one and she's 3.5, but it is so tough being a parent. And that line, right, where you don't want to have the kid locked up for the next year. And at the same time, it's so tough to give them that freedom back. And I think that's really that gray area that you and I live in every day as therapists that's so tough. So I think, again, it comes back to, and I do this often, is really, really emphasize, I am going to praise you. I am going to give you, I mean, as much as I can, that's age appropriate if you follow our values and our morals. And that comes back to picking battles, right? I have a mom I worked with that everything was a battle. So when it came to drugs, he's like, well, this is one more thing. I'm just, you know, I can't win.
Right.
So I guess coming back to it is having, I always say a day to us is like a week to a kid. So having immediate consequences, but also aren't, you know, a year long, yeah. Which is really tough for a parent that says, wait, I just caught my kid smoking pot. I'm supposed to ground him for only 2 weeks.
Right.
Right. So anyway.
But if you're going to do it and don't change your mind.
Right. Stick to it.
Okay. Let's go to a caller real quick. Anna, you're on line one with Tad Sumner.
Hi.
Hi.
I just had a comment about what I thought was really productive in my childhood. My parents always approached drugs and alcohol with the point that they wanted to provide for me if I was curious. And they wanted me to do it in a controlled environment. They didn't want me experimenting at a house party surrounded by strangers. And I was wondering if you'd seen that as being productive or maybe counterproductive, but I never took them up on the offer.
All right. Thanks, Anna. That's a great question. What we'll do is we'll answer that when we come back from the break, because we are. But keep listening, Anna, and we'll answer that question when we come back. We're at the halfway point in our show, so we're going to go ahead and take a short break. Remind folks you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on KSK Anchorage. My guest today is Anchorage adolescent therapist Tad Sumner from Psychology Resources. Our topic today is adolescent marijuana abuse. You can reach us with your questions or comments at 550-8433 or call us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And you can email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we'll continue our conversation with Tad Sumner. I'm Prentice Pemberton.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line One on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Anchorage adolescent therapist Tad Sumner from Psychology Resources. Her topic today is adolescent marijuana abuse. As always, you can email your questions or comments about today's show to line1@alaskapublic.org. You can call us locally at 550-8433 or reach us on our toll-free line at 1-888-353-5752. Please remember, the show repeats tonight at 8 p.m., so if you're listening to this on Monday evening, you'll be hearing a taped recording, and we will not be accepting phone calls. Before the break, Anna called and asked us a question about, I guess, the permissive parent would be the way to look at it, or the parent who wants their kid to do it in a controlled environment, in a safe place. I get that. That makes sense. But, I mean, we all knew the kids in high school that would allow us to drink at their house. And, you know, they would take the keys to some effect or another. But that's a slippery slope. And maybe the fact that Anna was the kind of person and kid who wouldn't take her parents up on that is an indication of why that was an okay thing for her parents to do. But, yeah, what do you think about the parent that tolerates it and wants them to do it in the safety of the home and would rather have all the kids over at their house so they know where they are?
Yeah, I mean, I think most of the time we're saying that that's dangerous, and the type of message the parent is sending is not ultimately the safest, right? Because I think a parent might be saying, well, the reality is my kid's going to go out and experiment. And right. And so from their perspective, they're saying, well, I'm going to do it in a safe environment.
And I guess from a parent who loves their kid very much.
Of course.
And who absolutely thinks that that is a reasonable thing to do. And if their kid only experimented with them, smoked marijuana 17 or 18 once and said that was not any fun. And
right.
I mean, great.
Right. And I think your point was really great about, well, Anna never, and I don't know if you tried it elsewhere, but you never took your parents up on it. And so that comes back to that your parents might have known you and they might have made that decision based on your personality and how and what they knew of you. And I teach a class at UA called Contemporary Issues with Substance Abuse. And we talk about other countries, other nationalities. Right. And it's very, very different in Europe, right, where a kid might be having wine with a meal from a very young age.
Quite common, yeah.
Right. And so you could argue that from a different perspective that parents are educating that it's not something like, oh, that it's secretive and I'm going to go do it and binge whenever I can do it. So I think there's a very different culture around there as well that they might teach the safety, you know, about it. And it's not always about getting drunk. It's, you right. know, that they're using as a social or dinner. So anyway.
Okay, Anna, I hope we answered your question. Let's go back to the phones. We have Steve. You're on line one with Tad Sumner. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. I just want to kind of go from a direct experience. I became a chronic smoker probably around 19. And before then, I had tried it, but it was never a big deal. It was kind of like, oh, yeah, momentary, okay, great. But in the dynamic that I grew up in a very intense family. Basically, by the time you were 14, they were already determining if you were going to be a Division I athlete or not.
Mm. Wow.
And I also had doctors. I had a doctor, lawyer, and doctor, and lawyers, and all this stuff. And we also had a lot of alcoholism. And we had sexual abuse. We had a lot of dynamics going on in the family. And I would argue that a lot of what inspires the abuse for kids is that lack of communication with the parents. And a lot of what went on in our family, I came from, they were pretty Nixonian Republicans. And I was a young kid, even at 10 years old, I was going on about Vietnam War and other stuff. And it was such a rigid mindset that I just thought, how can you guys allow this to happen in the family, this, and this, and this to happen to other people, and then you tell me I've got to follow the rules? Hmm. And it was really tough, and I think a lot of kids grow up with that. They go along, and, you know, because the truth is, as adults, a lot of us are, you know, you look at what's going on with the political situation now, how can a kid who's trying to grow up doing things right, going like, you mean that's what I'm supposed to grow up to be? Are you serious? And so when I was suicidal my senior year, but I also would, especially in light of the concussion research, I was a linebacker, football player. I played a lot. I hit a lot. Never got a concussion. I was lucky. I have a very Scandinavian head for some reason. But I did, you know, you think of the depression, the emotion, all the stuff that goes on with heavy head banging. And so that kind of tied in, yet I still didn't go into the drugs. You know, we'd have our weekend parties and this and that. But I took off for a year and left the town. Something said, get out of town after, don't go to college yet. So I took off for a year and adventured across the U.S., came back feeling more alive than ever before, only to find that the whole community that I was involved with before, they couldn't handle the change. And it was like, oh, my God, you guys really don't want me to be happy. Or, you know, people have set mindsets, and they stick with that. And I thought, wow. And I have to admit, when I started smoking that summer, I thought, this feels great. And I don't get angry, and screw it. And then I went off to college, and I did okay in college, but I did screw around some. But I did have plenty of opportunities to do the other drugs, this whole gateway thing. It's like, I don't agree with that. I mean, I know people have propensities based on addictive natures. Like my sister became a coke addict. But what you see is like, you know, certain drugs, it's like, okay, great. You know, I had my share, a little bit of LSD here and there. And that was a time when the dead were in Eugene, so it was all great. But once that was over, I was kind of like, you know, I just, nothing, you know. Now, in my senior life here, I still, a little bit of beer and a little bit of smoke. but I don't want to do anything else. And so, but what I did see over the years is when people, especially with pot, because I call it kind of like an anger suppressant. It's like when you just feel like everything is insane, it's a great way to just tune out, especially if you're stuck somewhere where you have nowhere to go. And I wonder sometimes, I see it happen a lot. You know, you'll see families that look perfectly healthy. Look at that doctor, mother, everybody. They got a nice house. And I know there's crap going on behind the scenes because I know it all too well over my experience watching and having other kids tell me about their experiences. So I think what goes on with a lot of the American mindset is we have a hard time. You know, it's like, well, here's an addiction. You know, it's the drug. It's the drug. And it's like, really? I did do a recovery program in a town in Oregon for a while. And one thing I did observe was that there was no capacity to deal with people's deep abuses. And so when we'd be in a group, there would be these discussions, and some of these people, I mean, 5, 6 years old, being raped and then abused and sold in a pro, you know, all this stuff. And I'm like, but the program had no capacity to deal with what I call the root causes of the pain. We'll find anything, you know, the truth is humans, if they've got pain, they'll find something to be take care of an addiction, you know, to tune out. And we see it all over the world. If they don't have pot, hell, they got something else. So it's, I think a lot of what our addiction across the board is that, you know.
Can I actually address that, the point you just made?
Sure.
Is that okay,
yeah,
Prentice?
Yeah, go ahead. Thanks, Steve. We're going to have you take the answer off the air. We got a lot of stuff to cover. So go ahead, Ted.
Yeah, I mean, I think what Steve was really emphasizing is that people use to feel better.
Yeah.
We know that trauma can absolutely affect people's dopamine levels, and people want to do things that feel better. So there was this experiment that was done where they had, and it's pretty famous, so a lot of people might have heard of it, where they put a rat in a cage and they gave it 2 water bottles. One with just pure water. The other one had, we were talking about this, either cocaine or
heroin
in it.
Yeah.
The rat that was in just this plain cage drank the bottle with the cocaine into it to the point that it died.
100% of the time.
I think.
Yeah, it was too.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100% of the time in isolation.
Right. Then somebody else, much later on, created an experiment where they made quote-unquote rat park. And the rats had balls, and it had mazes, and it had it could have as much sex as it wanted.
Food, water,
right,
yeah, toys.
Right, lots of toys, lots of food, all this stuff. Same thing. They had 2 things of water. One was regular water, and one with water with, again, I think it was cocaine in it. It barely touched the one with cocaine. Because, again, it's saying that if we create a rat park for ourselves, we get natural dopamine. We get dopamine from other things. Well, then we're not going to be so bored that we're going to want to get that dopamine artificially. So same way, if people are traumatized, well, they're going to get dopamine somehow, right?
Now, yeah. And, yeah. You know, the other thing to think about is that those brains that are isolated and alone,
right,
are the ones that seek out. I read a great article, and it was with the rat park thing, but that they believe now that a lot of addiction, oh, is a TED Talk.
Oh.
That's what it was, is about connection.
Absolutely.
Right? And that,
yep.
And that the brain can connect with a substance.
Yep.
And that connection, that attachment. So if you have that with other people, and that's a lot of why they think AA and other recovery programs,
yep,
work, that are group programs, because people get together and they have connection. So
right. Or as we're seeing, they'll connect with a computer or a game even, right? It's a whole nother discussion,
connect,
right?
Connect with something.
Yep.
And it's, somebody used the word, self-medicating. You said self-medicating, but I think of it as dissociative more,
yeah,
than anything. You're checking out,
yep,
and that's what the video games are, and the gambling, and the porn, and all these sort of addictive things, and they're all about connection and pleasure. Okay, Caroline, you're on the air with Tad.
Yes, good afternoon. I was wondering if our young people would make decisions or think they knew everything there was to know if they realized that their brain did not finish growing, maturing, until they were 23 to 25. And I say this as someone who, of course, they didn't have the equipment nor the knowledge to make assessments as to brain growth when I was young. I was in my 40s before I heard of it. And gave myself one of those dope slaps and said, well, that explains a lot. because, you know, I do think that's something we need to be teaching in our biology classes, so young people will be a little more skeptical about what they think they know.
Yeah, Caroline, that's a great call, and we're going to go right into that right now. Because I have that conversation all the time, and I do work really hard to educate my kids about brain development and the development of the frontal lobe and the rational center of the brain and pleasure centers in the brain and how they're impacting all of those developments by introducing an artificial substance on a consistent basis. So are the risks greater? Well, I know the answer to that. You know the answer to that. Everybody knows them. Why are the risks so much greater? And what are the risks as far as like early exposure? Because I got 12, 13, 14-year-olds smoking a lot of weed. And that's super dangerous. I don't care who you are or how you look at it.
I think, and I actually was trying to look at it before I came in, so don't quote me, but I think the research says that if somebody uses under the age of 18, they have a 90%, well, 90% of the people that meet a criteria for addiction begin use under the age of 18.
Yes.
They've shown that dramatically, even if you can get somebody to wait until I think it's about 18 and a half or 19 years of age, the chance of them developing an addiction, I think it drops by like 70%.
I think you're pretty close.
Yeah. So again, so don't quote me for my people out there, but I think it's roughly around this. So the point is the brain is maturing so much now from what we're seeing during these adolescent years. I mean, it's just bananas to watch the neurological development that they're... again, it's impacting the brain. The problem is... And this is what I love about working with teenagers, and everybody hopefully is laughing. If you tell a teenager, you don't know how to make good decisions for yourself, right?
Yeah.
They're like, oh yeah, you're right, Dad. You're absolutely right, right? Or their parents. No, they're doing what adolescents are supposed to do. I know what I'm doing. I know what's best. My 3.5-year-old, if I put a thing of cookies in front of her and I said, honey, now, I want you to make the best decision for how many cookies you should have, right?
Right.
I promise you, she's not
going to take 10, Daddy, is
yeah,
a good decision.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why parents, what we know is adolescents need their parents up until 18, arguably 20, to be still very involved in their lives. But that's, you know, what you and I are doing all the time is how to help a teenager and a parent transition into adulthood. But it doesn't mean that they don't need their parent. That's why, again, right, you need to have a relationship with your kid so he listens to you opposed to, okay, and then, you know, pacifies the parent, just get him off their back. So anyway, back to the caller. I forgot her name.
Caroline.
Caroline. Absolutely, Prentice is saying the same thing I do. I'm always trying to educate the kids I work with on this exact issue. And I think it does make some impact depending on the kid.
Well, hello?
Yes, Caroline, you're still there.
Oh, yes. Hi.
I'm not talking about necessarily, in my case, I know perhaps others, I'm not talking about any type of drug development. It's just a matter, I think the serious kids, which I was, would just be a little more critical of ourselves in terms of saying, well, we know this, we know that, and that sort of thing. So even without the chemical issue, you can certainly make life-changing decisions at an early age that might not be the best thing for you.
Absolutely.
And actually, one other point about that, Caroline, is I have a kid that I went over this with him, and his mom said, you're not allowed to get a tattoo until you're 23 years old when your brain finishes developing. This kid, he's 21, and he's like, I got two more years. So it's sunk in for him. And I think that's the point you're making. Yes, for some kids, absolutely. They hear it, and they're like, I shouldn't get that tattoo of... at 16 of Justin Bieber, right, on my back. Like, I love him, but maybe I need to wait until I get older.
Thanks for the call,
Thank
Caroline.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So, brain development. What do parents do? We're talking about the more serious kids that Caroline was talking about are probably more inclined, because I have a bunch of those kids, too, that I work with, and their issue is usually anxiety, right? Mm-hmm. They're super anxious about performance and not being good enough, and, you know, and they're not going to use drugs, and they know that their brain is not evolved all the way, and they know that they're making, you know, they got to think about their decisions. So those aren't the kids. I'm worried about them for a different reason. They beat themselves up all the time. But the marijuana abuse on the kids who won't let their parents parent them, what do you tell those parents? Like, the kids just saying, no, I'm not quitting. see ya. And they go and do what they want, and the parents are... I've had so many parents that at 14, they started with zero tolerance, and by 16, they're like, well, he's got C's, and he's not in jail, and, like, I really don't care if he smokes weed on the weekends, right?
Yep.
They settle for that. So
yep.
The parents who lose that parental power and let their kids sort of run the show, how do you tell parents? What do they do? Do they stick them right in treatment?
Well, I mean, no, I wouldn't say that. I think, again, that's a slippery slope, and I have countless kids I've ran into that too with their parents. Their parents, frankly, just get worn out.
Oh,
yeah. You know,
it's tiring,
right? Exhausting. Yeah. And they love them, right? And they're like, oh, I don't want my kid. You know, I've had kids even just early intervention. They've already been to Prime for Life, or they've gone to Raven's Way or Crossings.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, I want my kid home. He's not arguing as much when he smokes, right? Again, getting decent grades. I mean, the reality is in 2012, there was research done that I think 6.4% of a guy by the name of Rushford, only 6.4% of adolescents that meet the criteria for substance abuse get any formal treatment. So I'm not urging parents to, you know, shove their kid into treatment. However, we have to look at it as essentially 93% of kids that do have substance abuse problems as teens are not getting treatment, because a lot of parents are saying, well, they're just experimenting, or, you know, they'll grow out of it, or et cetera, et cetera. And we know that the earlier onset of people using marijuana, I'll say drugs in general, the higher chance that they will develop an addiction, right?
Yes.
So it's I always say it's a lot tougher to take things away from if you're a parent, it's a lot tougher to take things away from your kid rather than never give them anything at all. Now, I'm not saying never give your kid anything, right?
Right.
We've had the kid that comes in, the parents are like, he doesn't even have a bed anymore. Like, what am I supposed to do?
Rip the door off the thing. Yeah, that's a favorite intervention.
Right. So I think it comes back to, first, again, making very clear what your boundaries are. And again, what the reward is and what the consequence is. And then the next thing is, if it happens repeatedly that the kid will not follow your rules or expectations, then you have to up the ante, right? Meaning, okay, you're going to have to go either see a therapist, right? Or, which I always don't want that as a punishment either, right?
Yeah,
you have to come see Tad.
Yeah, but how many teenagers, there's a few, but not,
right.
The vast majority are not walking in because they're like, hey, I just really want to talk to somebody because I'm feeling a little unsettled and I'm smoking too much weed.
Right.
So, Mom, please make me an appointment.
Right. No, you're right. And so then the question comes back to is the parents' decision around what their own morals and values are around substance use, right? Because I think in 10 years from now, frankly, the culture around marijuana is going to be drastically different. I mean, that's a whole other topic, but
right,
it comes back to that I do think it's going to be looked at a lot more like alcohol and wine and things like that. But it still comes back to trying to answer your question is that if the person continues to use and if they're using often, now I'm being general with that term on purpose, is then the parent is going to have to make a decision about like that. Well, do I just sit back and say, oh, I love them.
I
can't let them
go.
Right. Or, okay, I've got to let them know I mean it. And then on the other hand, if they stop using, this sounds weird for a lot of parents because, well, they're not supposed to use, but praise the heck out of them.
Oh,
good job. I know that's tough. I know you could have used today, right? You didn't go there for lunch. I'm so proud of you.
Yeah, it's really tough because these kids seem to think that they know everything.
Right.
And many of them are doing well in school.
You
know, I got some really smart kids that are doing well in school, and they come in, they look at me, and they say, I got straight A's, I'm playing soccer, I smoke weed 3 or 4 times a week, what's the problem?
Yep.
I'm like, well, the problem is your parents are not okay with it, and they're about to put you in treatment, and you really don't want to go down that road.
Right.
So you should stop until you're out of the house and you can make your own decisions.
Beautifully said. And the other part about that is it starts coming back. If you're using 3 or 4 times a week, you could argue, okay, well, a lot of parents will go have a beer, right?
Yeah.
3 or 4 times a week. And mm-hmm. It's no problem at all. We're
right.
not saying you have a problem. But again, they're over the age of 21, right?
Yeah.
So I'm always talking about that it's not always, but often a coping skill. So what other coping skills do you have besides smoking marijuana, right? And trying to increase their repertoire.
All right, I got two calls. I'm going to go ahead and take Katie real quick. You just got a real quick question.
Yeah, hey, Tad, this is Katie. I actually graduated from Arch in 2010. September 28th is my sober date.
Oh, congratulations.
Arch is such a great program for all those that are out there looking for solutions to help their kids. Anyways, I am 24 now. Going to be starting a family of my own in the future. And I was wondering, you know, I want to share with my kid my story, you know, why drugs are bad and how they affect you, how they affect your relationships. At what age is that appropriate for a kid to be talked to about that?
Oh, can you please stay on the line? I love this question.
I know. We could have you on for the next 20 minutes.
And congratulations, by the way. But really quick, because of time, I always say this is a lose-lose conversation. Because if you tell your parent, if you tell your kid, I never use drugs, what do you think they're going to say?
Sure.
They'll probably be saying, oh, well, then I was going to say not hip.
Either you're a liar,
says that.
You're a nerd.
Right, you're a dork, you don't get it. And if you said, oh, well, I used back in the day, what do you think they're going to say? Well, it's okay for me,
yeah.
Right?
You've turned out all right.
So it's right. So unfortunately, it's kind of a lose-lose conversation. But I think any way you slice it, if you talk to the kid in a way that is from love, caring, and empathy, and sometimes even, hey, I love you so much, I'm actually not going to tell you that. And that is a slippery slope. I mean, every parent has to decide that. So, Katie, I don't know if I'm answering your question or not.
Yeah, no, well, I'm thinking of, like, cognitively, like, at what age do kids actually understand, like, or what age do they usually get exposed to drugs? And then at what age would they understand, like, oh, yeah, if I do this, it might mess up my relationship with my family. If I do this, it might get me fired from my job, or I might not be able to go to school anymore.
I think,
at what age do they understand all of this?
I think you start
appropriate.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think you start, like Apprentice is saying, at young, you know, 8, 9, 10, you can start saying small snippets, and then you increase it. And up until 6th, 7th grade, you just make sure you have that in-depth conversation with them.
All right, Katie, thank you for the call. We are out of time. Tad, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you taking the time to join us. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for having me. It was a blast.
Yeah, I think we got a lot more stuff we can probably go through. Please remember, we have a variety of links and information available about teen marijuana use on our show page. Just click the link to line one, and you can find that information. It's available on our website. You can also browse hundreds of topics on mental and physical health on our Line One archives. Over the past several years, the relatively common disorders of ADD and autism has received tremendous amount of attention from parents and professionals, but their diagnosis and treatment remain unstandardized. On the next Line One, Dr. Woodard discusses attention deficit disorder and autism spectrum disorders with his guests from the Alaska Neurotherapy Center. Dave Waldron is our web editor and audio engineer for today's show. Thanks for joining us today on Line One. I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.